Is this thing working? Can you guys hear me? Can you guys hear me? All right. Yeah, I don't think I'll have a problem with any of that. Yeah. Anyway, I'm Scott. I'm an alcoholic. thanks, Dave. That was awesome, man. It's really good to see you. I'd like to thank Tracy for coming all the way from Tennessee to hear me speak. And yeah. Good friends. Good friends. Things are very different today because I'm sober, you know. Wasn't like that back then. I'd like to thank Mark for asking me to speak and not being here. Fantastic. Yeah. Huh? I can lie now. So I came in the meeting. Someone outside asked me if I had like 5 years. I was like, do I look like I have 5 years? Probably do. My sobriety date is July 16th of 2007, which gives me 17 years now, yeah. I have a sponsor, and I talk to him at least once a week. He doesn't live in town, so I talk to him at least once a week. And my home group is the High Desert Big Book Group, and those things are very important to me, very important to me. They those three things have kept me sober, you know, to be honest with you. Those three things have kept me sober. I'm all over the place tonight. I got something in my eye, and I'm exhausted, and I got my shoulders killing me, and it's just, So, let me get centered here for a second. I know. Sorry. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous for a very long time. I got to AA when I was 19 years old. Actually, I got sober when I was 19 years old, but I got to AA in 1986. I was 17 years old, and I had been living on the streets for a couple of years, and living on the rooftops of some of the businesses out in Reseda, and just running amok, because I really had a very serious problem with authority. You know, I had a very serious problem with authority. I didn't care who you were. I didn't care what kind of authority it was. I didn't care any of that. If you were telling me what to do, I didn't like it. You know, I had a lot of that when I was a kid. I was born in Redondo Beach to a mom who should never have had kids, you know, and she went and had three of them. And I was the middle child, and that comes with its own set of psychological distress, but there was a lot of violence and a lot of abandonment in my house. And there was a lot of crap, just a lot of crap. And I ended up being taken out of the house when I was really young. And I grew up in foster homes and group homes and adolescent treatment facilities when I got old enough to have issues, you know, and juvenile hall when I had serious issues, you know, and that was my childhood, and that is a pretty clear cut example of my life when I'm not in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it looks like, you know, just a train wreck in every way, I had moments in my life where things were seemingly normal. You know, this one guy tried to adopt me out of this system and that I was in, and you know, during that time I became a Boy Scout, and you know, we went around and did all the selling Christmas wreaths and things like that door to door, and you know, I just thought it was just a real stupid thing to do, man. You know, I wanted all the merit badges and all that stuff, but I don't want to do any of the work to get it. You know what I mean? I'm that guy, right? I'm the gimme guy. You know, like gimme, take care of me. You know. anyway, I went on some one of these Boy Scout adventures. I don't remember exactly how old I was, to be honest with you. I was 12, 13, something like that, and I went on one of these camp out things at a campvention. I don't know if you guys know what that was. It was all these troops would get together and we'd all go camping and do activities and all whatever. You know, I'm the guy in the corner going, you know, this is dumb. Oh, this is dumb. Because I, as far back as I can remember, did not feel part of anything, right? I could look the part, but I didn't feel that way, you know? You were always better than me. You were always had cooler, you always had more merit badges than I did, you know? You had the attention of the scoutmaster, you know, all of that stuff, you know, that we look for, you know, when we're young. I think it affects alcoholics a lot worse. It affects alcoholics a lot more. We feel things at a level that normal people don't, I think. You know, that's been my experience, you know, with things that make people happy out there makes us elated, right? We get incredibly happy, right? So much so that we make fools of ourselves, you know, and stuff, you know, and things that make people a little sad, you know, we go into depression, man, and want to kill ourselves, you know, and that's just alcoholism, man. That's it. I didn't know that, of course, at 12, you know. But I remember being in the tent with these four guys that I was, you know, we were sharing the tent, and one of them had packed some vodka in a canteen, you know, and filled it up pretty good, and we were passing it around in the tent, and of course I don't want to look bad to this guy, you know, I don't, so I take a hit of this stuff, and all I remember is that when they called us to go do the next activity, we all went out there, and I just kind of took a little sideways thing, turned around, and went back to the tent and killed that, right? And they didn't like that too much, but I didn't really care. You know? I didn't really care. And you know, your feelings were not a high priority in my life. They just weren't. <You know? clears throat> The only thing that ever really mattered to me was taking care of me and getting right, you know, whatever that looked like. You know, and if you had something that I needed to make that happen, you were in my way, you know, and I would get that. I would get that most of the time by stealing it, you know, most of the time by going around behind your back because I was afraid to fight. I'm not a fighter, you know. I got that way in sobriety, but I'm not a fighter, you know what I mean? I don't like fighting unless I know I can win, right? Unless I know I can win, you know, and that's the story for another day anyway, but I killed that thing, and I can't tell you that like the skies opened up or anything like that. I can't tell you that. I don't remember any of that. I remember feeling okay, and okay was fine by me, you know. Another time my mom had moved us to Panorama City down there, and you know, I was there about 3 weeks, and I was hanging out with Eric and Anthony, my two best friends that I had met like a week before, you know, and they're hitting a wine bottle and smoking a joint down in the parking area, and they offered it to me, and I don't want to look bad to these guys, you know, so I took that, and I went, thanks a lot, and I had to go upstairs, and I went upstairs, and I remembered my grandparents were coming over, and I had just walked in the door, and it hit me like a ton of bricks as I was walking in the door, and I'm like, hey, yeah, hi, you know, to everybody. And my mom just kind of stared at me, and just this is one of the moments that I was living with my mother, by the way. She just kind of stared at me, and she said, "Go to your room." I'm like, okay. So, you know, what I learned from that experience and from the, you know, other thing is that there were no consequences for what I was doing. No, I didn't get in trouble. You know, they asked me, what did you do? And I told her, and she went, don't do that again. And I went, okay, absolutely, you know, right on. So it's about a year and a half later, I was living on the streets, you know, and running amok. And because everybody seemed to have a problem with the way I was taking care of myself, you know, and I just got tired of everybody's problem with me. And I figured it was a problem with you, you know. There's a lot more to that, which this meeting is not long enough for that, you know, but there's a lot more to that, including the, you know, all this damage and stuff that had happened with my mother and why I ended up going to all these foster homes and group homes and things. But I can tell you that none of that stuff was the reason that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. None of it. You know, the reason I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I take a drink, something happens to me that doesn't happen to my grandmother, right? I become a different person, and I need to fix me, right? After one of these serious blowouts with my mother, I ended up on the streets with my buddy Chris, and we're running amok, you know, and we're just, God, man, that was crazy. We're walking up Sherman Way. This is 1987, and it's about September, October or something. It was really cold that night, and we're walking up Sherman Way, and we're walking by Sherman Way and Topanga, which there was a clubhouse there called the Hole in the Sky that used to be on that corner. And I went in there because they had coffee. You could smell it. You know, they had donuts, and they were smoking cigarettes, and I didn't have a whole bunch of cash with me at that point in my life. And so I walked in there and asked them, you know, for a cigarette and a donut and coffee. They said, yeah, come right on in, and sat down. And what ended up happening is that I just went from walking around with no purpose, you know, to being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not really sober. I don't really think I needed to get sober. I thought, you know, I'm glad this thing works for you people. You know, I'm really, really happy that you're getting something out of this, but you know, I don't really have a problem. My problems are my mother. My problems are the cops. My problems are society in general, you know, and all of that stuff. And I have found that until I found some personal responsibility in what was going on in my life didn't change. Not one bit. Didn't change one bit. And sometimes it takes some really drastic stuff to get that personal responsibility. You know, sometimes it takes jail. Sometimes it takes dying, you know, for us at least. Anyway, there was a guy that used to hang out at the Hole in the Sky, this homeless guy, who was always drunk and always on the back steps of the place, always just a complete mess. And I remember I was standing there when somebody asked him, what's going on, man? Why can't you just come in and get the answer here? And, you know, we have one. We have an answer. And he was like, because when I'm drunk, I hate you. When I'm sober, I hate me. And he said that. And I went, wow. You know? And that struck a chord with me. That didn't stop me, of course. I had to continue doing what I was doing. But somebody put me up on their couch. You know, what AA people do, they put me up on this couch and said, try to get sober and try to get in this recovery house and don't steal from me. You know. So I stole from him. I didn't try to get sober and I didn't try to get into this recovery house, you know. But he let me stay there for like a month And I had ended up putting together like a week or so sober, and I thought I was pretty impressed with that. And then I got loaded again, and he helped me get into a place called Chandler Lodge down in North Hollywood. And Chandler Lodge is one of the oldest men's recovery houses anywhere, actually. It's been around a long time. And it was my birthday. And I had 5 days, and they put me in there in front of like a stack of like 15 people that were waiting to get in there. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know why it happened, but it happened. And I walked into the meeting that night, and there was a speaker. And I just remember sitting down and just going, you know. As the only sensation that I can remember from that whole thing was it felt like I'd been holding my breath for like 3 years and I finally was able to breathe it, you know. And it was a miracle, you know, but that went away immediately. But I do remember that, you know. I do remember that. And I stayed around, and I started going to meetings, and I found a sponsor, and he told me to do things like call him and, you know, show up, you know, and like tell him how I'm doing and, you know, all of this really lame stuff. And so I fired him and I went and found another sponsor at another place. I had five sponsors in my first year. And And they all wanted me to do stuff like that. So I just kept, like, moving on. You know, like, you're really not getting it. Because, see, I was all about my story. I was all about my being a victim. You know, I was all about the victim thing, you know. And if you would sit for 25 minutes, I'd sit and I would hold you hostage and tell you my sad story, you know, my sad story. Never got any relief from that, but it just was where I was stuck, you know, and I just how I was approaching life, man. It was always your fault. It was everybody's fault, especially my mother, you know. And if I can get you to cry, I was like, yes, you know what I mean? I got a lot out of that. I met a guy at Chandler Lodge who... He always came up and gave me a hug, and I hated that. I was the guy sitting in the back corner. I had this leather jacket, this heavy leather jacket. This is like 1989. I have this heavy leather jacket, and across the back it says Guns N' Roses on the top and on a rocker, and then on the bottom it said F U. Big, big patch, you know. Heavy metal buttons all over it, because it was 1989. You had to be there. I had hair, you know. My hair was down to like here, you know. And yeah. And I told him, dude, quit giving me a hug. And he kept giving me a hug. And he kept telling me, I love you, Scott. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. Go away, you know. But he sat down with me when I had about a year sober. Because people ask, you know, how did you stay sober through all that stuff? And I'll be honest with you, it was God's grace. There's absolutely the only thing that could have kept me sober, you know, was God's grace. Because I didn't change at all when I got sober. I wasn't any different, you know. I wasn't any different. I just was enjoying the benefits of not being loaded and not waking up in a puddle of puke and not, you know, not having that gnawing, God, I got to get more feeling. You know, and what do I got to do to get more? You know, because I like to do the stuff that David did. And, you know, on top of drinking. And he said, well, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to offer you this opportunity to go up to the mountains and take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a bunch of people. And, you know, it was you just bring yourself and your pitiful excuse for a personality. And I kind of took a little bit of offense to that, but you know, yeah, this is what he said to me, you know, and be here at 6 and we're going to get in the car and go, you know? And so we went up to Arrowhead, and I had never been to Arrowhead. It's very nice up there. And I, went through this process where they put people through the steps, quickly. There was, they put you through the first 8 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I don't have a judgment on that either way, on how they do it or how they did it, except that they didn't follow up with, do the 9th step or you're going to drink. You know, they didn't follow it up with that, and I think that's vitally important. You know, so I left there. I did a 5th step up there, and I was as honest as I possibly could be at that time in my life. And I did a 5th step with this guy, and I felt like I was part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt like it, you know. That was the first thing that happened to me after taking the steps, you know, or at least doing some action as far as the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that I felt like I was part of this thing, and I wasn't just taking up space in a seat somewhere. You know, because I had always felt like that. I always felt like they're going to figure me out and kick me out of here. You know, I always felt like that was going to happen. and that never happened. You know, so I was part of that group for a couple of years, and we were running around doing these meetings where we would put people through the steps. And you know... I stayed sober for 15 years in my first sobriety, and I can't say, and I've been thinking about this because sometimes when I've shared recently, I've talked about how, you know, I was completely BS the entire time, and I was, you know, my ego and bullshit was what kept me sober, you know, and all this stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that, but what happened, and the reason I didn't stay sober is that our book talks about it, you know. If you don't enlarge and improve upon your spiritual life and your connection with something stronger than your disease, you're screwed. It says it there, right? And I never read that. I mean, I read it, but I didn't care what it said because I got my thing going on over here, and it's really cool. I had a lot of ego in my first year of my first sobriety. They had a nickname for me at my candlelight meetings. I would go to candlelight meetings. I helped start a candlelight group down at Radford. Those meetings are still going on right now. It's pretty cool, you know. But the room would light up when I came in there because I had this group of friends and we were very alike and we all sat in the back and we would make fun of whoever was sharing and we would talk, you know. If there was somebody talking AA, we would just be busy talking about music or talking about whatever and making fun of how he's dressed. And, you know, the nickname was Scott MF and Clark, right? Hey, how you doing? You know, because that's what I brought to the table. You know, that's what I brought to the table in every relationship that I had, you know, and just looking for that pat on the back that I'm okay, you know, and never really finding it. Never really finding it. So I stayed sober for 15 years. My life got very good. I started a business, started making a lot of money. I ended up getting moved from one of my customers moved me to Miami, Florida. And while I was there, I lived there for 3 years. And while I was there, I started to go to some meetings, but they didn't really do it the way that we do it here in LA. You know what I mean? They didn't have the we're the mecca of AA, right? You know, we're the mecca of sobriety here. And clearly they don't know what they're doing. So I stopped going to meetings, you know. I stopped going to meetings because there was nothing there for me. It's always about me, always, you know. And, you know, I got to tell you, I was stone cold sober, 14 years sober at the time, and I decided to get engaged to a working hooker, you know. Because that'll fix me, right? That'll fix me. She made me feel good. So it was great, you know. Man, these are the kind of insane things that I think about, right? These are the insane things. These are choices that I make absolutely stone cold sober, and they make absolute sense to me when I'm making those choices, right? Absolute sense. This is absolutely what I need to do, you know? Don't run it by anybody. Don't talk to a sponsor. Anyway, I got drunk, right? That's what happened. Is that, you know, she bailed because I was broke, you know? The job I went out there for kind of imploded, and everything just fell apart. And I got loaded with a passion. You know, I ended up living in a. I went in the 9 month, in a 9 month there, 9 month span of time. I was living in a. I was living on the water in Miami. I was 10 feet from the water, from the intercoastal. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful place. In 9 months, I was living in my dealer's closet in Brunswick, Georgia. You know, and everything that I had left. Was in where I just traded off my life, just traded it off, you know, and that's with all the knowledge about Alcoholics Anonymous you could have, all the knowledge about what this illness is, you know, and I just needed to take care of me. So somebody gave me a plane ticket to come back to California, and I did the rounds of all the sober livings in the valley for a while. I ended up going to Acton in 2006 and fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous while I was there, you know, because I was sober. And they kept pumping the stuff into me, and all that, the bits of good things that I had in my previous sobriety just came back, and I was just like, this is awesome. And I can't wait. And I can't wait to get out of here, go be sober, and get my life together, you know. And I got out, and 10 days later, I beat a court case, got a truck, got a job, got a place to live, got a pipe, got a bottle, you know, because that's what we do. And I wasn't even looking for it that day. I wasn't even looking for it. I just taken this truck out, you know, on Sunday, you know, with no supervision, and I'm driving down Sepulveda, because it's nice. It's a nice day, and I make a right on Devonshire. And I just, you know, it's just like, you know, right into the hood, man. And I'm like, you know, and it's just, and I went down from there. And for so acting used to be a co-ed rehab also for a long time until it wasn't. And I think they got tired of the acting babies that were happening. The entire time I was there, I was being really, you know, I still had that ego thing, man. I played a little guitar, and so I was hanging out in the band instead of going to the meetings, right? And we did the shows because it was over the holiday season, so I did some shows with them, and everyone was like, Scott, you rock, awesome. And I'm just, all I've ever been looking for in my life is somebody tell me I'm awesome. You know, just tell me I'm awesome. I'm not acting awesome. I'm not bringing awesome to the table, but that, you know, tell me I'm awesome and I'll be okay, you know, and that didn't happen. You know, that didn't happen most of my life, but there it happened. It was great, you know, and got a bunch of lunatics coming off the street from Fifth and Cocker going, woo, rock and roll, you know, it's just insanity, you know. I met a girl while I was there because that's so much more important than working the steps. You know, it just is what it is, you know. And so her and I went on a run, got arrested 7 months later, and right here in beautiful downtown Quartz Hill, right on 50th Street, right up from the Grange, man. And I got a felony, got a DUI, and got sober, you know. My life sucked at that point. You know, and going to jail was just the icing on the cake, man. It was just horrible. And so I spent a month in jail while they were figuring out whether or not they were going to put me in prison for 3 years, you know. And I got out of there, and I went to a meeting the next day. And, I spent my first 30 days in jail. But anyway, that was July 16th of 2007. And I've been in meetings ever since. You know, I my life does not work without Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about you. I don't know anything about being a functional alcoholic. I don't get that. Yeah, I logically understand what that is. It doesn't apply to my life. I have no experience of that. When I drink, what happens is like a light switch, right? And the animal takes over, and it's just on, and everything of value in my life goes up on a shelf. You know, just goes on a shelf. And I'll get to that later. I will get to that later. And I never get to it. I'll never get to it. And I think that's pretty common with us, you know. That's why the book talks about how our problems just keep piling up and piling up and piling up until they're seemingly impossible to solve, you know. So I came in here with a huge pile. Right, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a gigantic pile. I was on felony probation. I had nowhere to live. My business was shot, you know, and I had no job. And I'm living on the couch at this crazy chick's place, right? And I decided that jail sucked, and I didn't want to go back to that. And I made a conscious decision to just see what happens next. I don't know. That's about the simplest way I can put it. I'll just see what happens next. So, you know, what happened next is that I surrendered to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and as a result, I got a job and all this stuff, man. You know, it just started coming, and that's what happens for us when we surrender to this deal. You know, is that we kind of make this conscious decision to allow God to work, even if that's not what you're calling it at the time, because I sure wasn't, you know. But we kind of like open that door a little bit, and God comes in and gives you stuff, you know. Because I don't know about you, but my God's a pretty decent guy, and he gives me stuff, you know. or he places opportunities in front of me to go get it, you know, all the time. You know, happens all the time. You know, I've had many different jobs in sobriety. I've had many different things. About 9 months into sobriety, I met this man at our stag meeting, and he was the first person that I ever believed actually walked the walk. You know, that he was talking. Not that they weren't, not that other people weren't, but this guy, I don't know what it was, you know. He said something in a meeting one night, and I just went, I got to go talk to this guy, you know. And I asked Dave to be my sponsor, and you know, he was my sponsor for 16 years. You know, till he passed away last year. You know, and I got to be there and hold his hand as he took his last breath. You know, that man took 13 hours out of a work day to do my fist step with me. You know, because that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my job is to be of service to you. You know, if I'm being service to you, I can't think about me and my crazy. I can't think about me and the things that are wrong in my life. You know, if I stop being of service to you, all that shit comes back quick, comes back super fast, man. And so I got to remember that that's the solution here is getting out of myself in every single way that I possibly can, because all I've ever done is think about me. That's all I've ever done, is think about me and how you think of me and what you can give me to take care of me, right? All I've ever wanted to do is just be, get right. And the only way my brain tells me to get right is that, you know, I understand you have problems, but I'm busy, you know, and I got to go over here and do my thing. And thank God Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a way to not live like that anymore. You know, I have gotten free from that, you know, and it took a long time. That girl that I went out with, you know, after getting out of Acton, you know, we were together like 12 years. And it was a sick relationship, man. It really was, you know. And it was a train wreck. And it wasn't like a violence or any of that stuff. But we hated each other, you know. And we lived in a house for, you know, 11 years together, you know, just hating each other, you know. And neither of us would get up and leave. Neither of us would get up and leave because. I know for me, I was afraid. I'm afraid to be alone. I'm afraid to take care of me and stand on my own two feet and really trust God. You know, I'm the guy who wants just enough money so that I don't have to trust God, right? That's why I will never win the lottery. I know that. I know that. Because God wouldn't do that to me because I'd kill myself, right? I would kill myself with a quickness. And anyway... About 11 years sober, we both get up and we both got arrested the same night. We went to jail in the same car, kind of thing. We took 11 years, and it was the most uncomfortable thing. And you know, because we've been taking cakes together for a long time. And about 3 weeks later, she decided that she really wanted to drink. So. She came up with some excuse why she couldn't be in the relationship anymore. And I said, well, okay, bye. I was waiting for that because I couldn't come up with it myself, right? And she left and got drunk, you know. She left and got drunk. And it's really sad. It's really sad that that happened. But, you know, it's choices we make. I spent some time working on me, and I got my head together. I got right. And crazy enough is that when I did that, and I got right, God put Shelby in my life, right? You know? I love you. Yeah, she's awesome. She's the best relationship I've ever had in my life. And it's not perfect in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I screw it up all the time. All the time, you know? But Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to clean that stuff up too, right? I take some responsibility. I pray about it. I write about it. Talk to my sponsor. I go back and I'm sorry, babe. This is what happened. And we're pretty good at that stuff. You know, pretty good at that stuff. I work at an Air Force base. So is that going to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous can work for, you know, miracles? You know, I'm the guy who literally got kicked out of a carport storage area because I was putting my feet on the guy's Cadillac to get into my house every night. Right? You know, I have a clearance with the government. They trust me with stuff. You know, I get to go on base every single day and I watch these airplanes fly around and they pay me for that. I love airplanes, man. It is the best thing that's ever happened. Well, not the best thing. You're the best thing. William's the best thing. My first sobriety, I got married to someone I couldn't stand and she couldn't stand me and it just was great. So we got married to try to fix that because... Alcoholics, man. This is our thinking, right? So that didn't work out. So we got pregnant, you know, to fix that. That didn't fix it. But we got a really great kid out of it, you know. And what happened was, a couple of years ago, my son, who's now 28 years old, has his own issues, you know, and he likes some of those outside issues and those things of that nature. And we were able to go out to Denver and do an intervention on him, and he's been sober 2.5 years. You know, he goes to meetings, and he loves music festivals, and he finds the sober people at the music festivals and goes and hangs out with them, and he's living his life. He's doing great, you know. I didn't talk to him for 2.5 years because I was out there, you know. I didn't want to taint him with any of the stuff I was doing, you know what I mean? And I'm sure that a lot of his problems in life had a lot to do with the damage that I did to him, you know, by just, you know, ghosting him for 2.5 years. You know, that's pretty heavy shit. But we've been able to make amends to each other and clean that up, you know. Best as it can be cleaned up, I guess, you know. And my life looks nothing like it did when I got here. Nothing, you know, nothing. And I am shocked on a regular basis by the good things that happen. But I also believe that the good things happen because I stay here and I do the work here and I sponsor people and I try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous like it was given to me, you know, because it's my job. I don't get to keep this if I don't give it away, you know. I listen to a lot of speakers because I think the speaker tapes that I have are just fantastic. They carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you'll go to meetings and you'll hear a lot of meetings, at a lot of meetings that there aren't, you know, they don't carry the message. You know, there's a lot of meetings that don't carry the message. You know, the message is that if you come here and you sit down and you sit all the way down and you do this stuff, you know, and you drop the ego for a second and ask somebody for help, you know, your life will change. Everything about your life will change. And you won't have to drink anymore. I couldn't stay sober 72 hours. I couldn't do it. I came back to L.A., and while I was doing those sober living houses, I'd go out to eat with my sponsor afterwards, and I'd be like, I can't stop drinking, and I can't figure out why. And he goes, because you won't stop drinking. How about that? You know? Yeah, exactly. And I'd get on a bus, and I'd go down to North Hollywood where I knew I could get some stuff, and I'd do my thing every single night. You know, and it took me a lot of pain and a lot of agony to get to the point where I was just like, okay, what do I have to do? You know, what do I have to do? Because I don't ever want to go back to living that way. I don't ever want to. And here's the thing. I don't have to. I don't have to. I found an amazing life here in AA. You know, I have deep and effective relationships with people in my life. And I, like I said, when I got to AA initially, I'm the guy in the corner going, get the hell away from me. You know, I'm not like that anymore. I love people. Well, I love the people I love. Let's be honest. Yeah, I don't love everybody, but I try, you know, I try, you know, I am deeply grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, every day that I stay here, I get a little bit more like, this is absolutely a miracle. Absolutely. I'm not necessarily a miracle. AA is the miracle, you know. And I'm just filled with gratitude at the fact that I get to be part of that, you know. I get to be part of that. If you're new and you're sitting here going, this is BS. And not because what I'm saying is BS, but like you're sitting deep down in the core of yourself going, I'll never get that. I'll never get that. There's no way. I felt exactly that way when I walked back in here. Felt exactly that way. All I did was a couple things that they told me to do, you know. I got a sponsor, and I was honest with that man. And I didn't bring my ego to the table anymore, you know. at least as much as I couldn't. You know, when I was in a meeting, I tried to listen, you know, and by doing that, I've learned a lot, you know. I don't believe that the longer you're here, the less you know. I don't believe that at all, you know. You learn some things here, and you put those things into practice in your life, and your life is going to change, and you're going to be ridiculously better off than you are right now. That's been my experience. That's been my experience, you know. If you're new, find somebody here who looks like they're getting the results from this deal. Because they're around. You'll see it. You know, they're all over the place. You'll see it. All you got to do is ask them how they got it, and they'll show you. Anyway, thank you for letting me share. This has been awesome.